Welcome to Blightbringers, a Legion of Everblight focused podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Tyrone, and joining me this week is Ryan. Welcome back, Ryan.
Ahoy!
What? No, Ryan, we talked about this.
No, I'm doing it. It's mine now.
Why? Why are you like this? Oh, God. Welcome back.
What up?
Not much. CID is still going on. Please, God, let it end.
It was super interesting for the first week. And then it got slightly less interesting in the second week. And now the third week is literally the same threads that have been for the last 2 weeks by almost the exact same people using almost the exact same arguments. It's almost, and maybe this is just me, almost like if it didn't get a reaction in the first 2 weeks, it's probably not going to get a reaction now. The fuck do I know, though?
All right. Yeah, that's fair. That is fair. Alright, also, we have a returning guest. Avery, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
Yeah, it's lovely to have you back on. This is, we talked a bit before the show about kind of where you're at with Legion, and like, this is your first CID at all, right?
It is, yeah.
How has that been for you?
Honestly, it's been pretty good. Going into this, there was a lot of salt on the Discord, just like, it's gonna be awful, everyone's gonna be screaming at each other. And so I was like, okay, I'm gonna brace for like the worst possible internet interactions I can imagine. And like, with that as my baseline, I'm like, oh, productive comparatively.
Yeah, there was a fair bit of concern going in because we knew that it wasn't going to be a CID where battle reports were king, right? Because that's kind of what they've been up to this point. If you wanted to get any sort of useful feedback across, you were kind of expected to write a battle report for a game that you've played. With the COVID-19 epidemic, we weren't allowed to do that. So a lot of the community was like, it's going to be a complete shit show. But it really hasn't.
Yeah, I think one of the things that has made it feel more productive is the fact that, like, leading into this, Hungerford explicitly said, like, we will give more priority to, like, list building and secondary priority to specific interaction discussions, which just meant that, like, it's less effective to argue with someone and more effective to just, like, make a list and play around with the tools you have.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm, like, getting into the trenches and, like, bickering with people more than I did.
Yep. It was also kind of interesting the way they prioritized it to a point, because like, if you just made a list and were like, yes, I think Blight Archon is really good, and here's a list that I would put it in, like, that's just one data point. Now, if you had, you know, 20 people that were doing the exact same thing or very similar, okay, then maybe there's something there. But like, so many of the lists were, at least the one that I was reading, were so diverse, and there were so many different reasons people were taking things, that it's like, nothing stood out to me as an immediate like red flag of, yes, you always are going to see this unit with this output in a list all the time. I mean,
yeah, something I noticed is that people who aren't Legion of Everblight players were really consistent on saying Kallus 1 in Primal Terrors with a Blightbringer and 2 Blight Archons, each of which has 1 Harrier and 2 units of Chosen, 2 Hellmouth units, and some Rotwings. Like, that list was really, like, specific, but I didn't actually see any Legion players trying to build around a Kallus 1 brick.
Well, the funny thing is, that list was bad. I don't know why that got picked up on, other than somebody going, well, yeah, but it's super high armor, and it's like, cool. Kador's been bringing super high armor for years. Been able to beat that. I don't see Kador running the meta. So what are you whining about?
Well, you see, Ryan, they have rapid healing in Legion, so it's more effective.
Oh, right, because there's definitely not, like, Grievous everywhere or Entropic. There's not, like, an entire Archon that just has an aura of fuck you healing. You know what? You're right. I must be wrong here. I'm missing it. My bad.
Yeah. It is unfortunate that a certain line got taken that was very similar to the discussion around Chosen last CID, and that's the thing that I was personally worried about, where it's like, people are going to lose their minds about very specific things, especially around armor, and it's going to dominate the conversation. And I don't know if that like fully happened. There was definitely a couple threads here and there that popped up that got a lot of feedback on it. And I don't know if that's a good or bad thing, but I do know that basically I think that Hungerford and Faye have done a really good job of identifying those things as maybe outliers or something that they're willing to accept as part of the Legion toolkit going forward. But you know, this is Hungerford's first go at the helm as well. And so we had him on to talk about that, and he was really excited about what Legion could do following this CID. So I think he's kind of happy with where they're at.
I agree. Mm-hmm. The thing that stuck out a lot to me thinking about it was funny that you could kind of tell the factions people played almost by their the things they posted about. So like, if you were, and I'm going to make some generalizations here, so anybody who, you know, could buy this, forgive me or don't, I don't actually care. If you were a Legion player and like a semi-decent one, so you were somewhere near like the middle of the pack to the better side of a player, you were focusing on like the models you thought generally needed to get brought up. You were looking at things and going, okay, is this good enough? Like Virtues was a big one that I saw, you know, a lot of people talking about, and it was like, hey, I don't know what this unit is supposed to do. You know, how do I get this to be in a better spot so that it's usable, so that it gets, you know, taken more, so that people like it, so that it feels like it has a job and it's not just a one-trick pony. The people who were like, either didn't play the faction, or maybe they didn't play as seriously, maybe they played for fun, maybe they were just dipshits, I don't know, were the ones that were coming out and playing the card of, hey, this Kallus One list is super overpowered. And the reason why, and the more I thought about it, it made sense to me, was because Primal Terrors was the only list Legion had for quite a while. Like, it was the thing you had to be playing. If you weren't playing Kallus One, you probably weren't doing well in an event. And that stuck out to people. So, of course, the first thing you're going to grab at is that Kallus One list. Because, well, this is done well now. What tools does this new stuff bring to it? The existing Legion players who are pretty good are looking and trying to innovate and going, okay, where is the best place I can put the Archon, the Virtue Champ, Beth 2? What's their fit? What can they do? The people were the ones that were going, yeah, but this is the only thing I've had to play against, and I don't want this specific thing to get better. And I thought that was really interesting, and also really dumb.
That's an interesting perspective. I didn't consider that people would focus on the things that have been beating them or they've been seeing. That makes sense now that you've put it out there. But yeah, that makes a lot of sense based on the feedback that I saw from people who were concerned about that specific thing.
It makes sense sometimes. Doesn't happen often, but it does happen.
No, that's a good point. But we should probably quickly move into CID. We got week 3 changes on Friday, which was well-timed because I had a podcast go up about 2 minutes after that. So that was fun. Great.
Filling it with professionalism as always.
Oh yeah. Perfect. All right. So I've got the list of changes here in front of me. Let's start with Bethane 2. They had considered giving her, them, however you want to look at it, I don't like it as much. I like them. The word living in the feet, but that was mostly to cancel out some weird interactions with the objective and potentially the plot. But they actually changed that to not say living, which is really great. And the actual change that they did this week is they removed from enemy attacks wording from the feet, so now we can get rid of things like electroleaps and other not attack stuff. So any source of damage now can be shifted around, which is just fabulous.
Yep. Puts E-leap, spine burst, slams, collateral damage, random not attack things is back in now, which is super nice because it means you don't just casually die to like the random Nemo 3.
Yeah, that seems good to me. Avery, what are your thoughts on Bethane 2's feat, and do you think it's going to stay this way?
I mean, I think it's going to stay this way. They mentioned when they rolled out week 1 that this was one potential, the original feat that we saw was one potential iteration, and they play tested several. And it seems like based on that week 1 feedback, they were like, great, we're going to plan B. And it seems like at this point it's just minor tweaks. I think that the week three change of removing the like from enemy attacks clause is great because it means like I see two uses for Bethane's feet potentially, right? Like one is having things on flags in contesting zones that you want to be like, listen, you just can't really remove this. It's not worth sinking 30 points of activations into clearing this 4-point model. And then the other one is like chosen don't die. And I think that first one's actually the more interesting one. And this change to the feat makes it actually work that way. So I like it. And I don't think it's going to change very much.
Yeah, I was super down on this feat in going into week two. I thought that it kind of gutted a lot of the power that was very evident. And I mean, it makes sense. Like it was probably too good, but it was something that I foresaw using on single wounders and that kind of went away with this feat, where, as you say, like it's good on chosen, which like obviously things are great on chosen. They're amazing. But I think that I've seen enough now that I can accept that this feat's actually like really good still.
Honestly, I'm not in love with it, but that's just because I have a hard time trying to find a list that I really like with her. So I'm sure it's powerful. I just got to find a list that feels good.
Yeah, fair enough. Shall we move on to the Angelius?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So the Angelius last week picked up a couple rules, but in doing so, it made its kit a little awkward. To fix that, what they've done this week is they've changed the bite to range 2, which, you know, for a noodly war beast, as been described, being able to range 2 bite things is really nice. Avery, your thoughts?
I feel like power level-wise, changing its other melee weapon to range 2 doesn't make a big difference. But in terms of just, like, the elegance and cleanness of the model, and in terms of, like, templating, I feel like having it be range 2... like, it really tidies up the model. If it was, like, you have a range 1 melee except for a single shot range 2, like that, it just felt like it introduced a bunch of little corner cases that were just kind of messy or sloppy feeling. And so this feels good. I really hope the Angelius would gain something that would allow it to respond to vision and mad visions, so that you're not spending 15 points on a model that potentially only gets one exciting attack that gets automatically negated, but that didn't happen and this feels good.
Yeah, I think changing the bite to range 2 is good. I think the single shot change makes sense, but I do, like, I share your concern that, you know, we've been wanting the Angel to be able to just do its job, and you're right, vision is kind of hurting it a lot. But at least it doesn't have sacrifice both its initials for the one armor pierce that you know is going to get negated. So there's that, right?
And I think, like, one thing that comes to mind is that the Archangel has the ability to consume a small base model, which can remove the Hermit, which is, like, the biggest hard counter to the Angelius's hitting power, in terms of just, like, it's a 5-point model that can effectively negate the whole reason you brought a 15-point model. And so at least having one more option to consume the Hermit feels like the Angelius is less of a liability. Maybe, yeah, I'm really overthinking this Hermit thing, but it does feel like an unfortunate counter.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Like, you did post a thread about it. Ryan, what are your thoughts on the Angelius, where it's at?
Well, from now on, I will only refer to it as the spicy ramen noodle. So that's new, and I like it.
Thanks, I hate it.
Cool. We're currently at Blarcon. Blurreal is the combo, and now nope. Spicy Ramen Noodle.
Nope. So
if anybody comes up with any other fun ones, please let me know.
I hate all of that.
I'm sure you do, and that's why I'm going to continue to use it.
Oh, God.
You know how this works by now.
Yep.
On to the actual model. Spicy Ramen Noodle got a needed change. I agree with Avery that it's a lot cleaner than all things they could have done, but I don't know how much I like it for 15 points. It certainly, if you can get the armor piercing off, it hits hard. But if for whatever reason you can't, then it's only doing about as much work as an Arif on average. So I guess it depends on where you're going to put it. I've seen people talking about it with the Blight Archon because Sprint, and I think that's definitely worth trying. I think I'd be happier with it with a map boost, but I'm that's just me wishlisting a little bit. As it stands, I think you'll see it in some lists. I think it has value in it existing, but I don't know that it's going to be a thing you see multiple of or how often it's going to be seen at this point.
Yeah, is it different enough from a Nerf is the question that I'm coming back to. And I think you're right about the damage output. To me, it's like, I don't know, maybe I just keep taking the Nerf.
I think it's different enough, right? Fury 4 versus Fury 3 is actually a pretty big difference. And the Animi is still useful. Like, if you need to get something out of a zone, that Repulse is a great way to do it. And if you have, you do take it on a Blade Archon, you know, it goes up and repulses, and then the Angel goes up and makes some attacks, sidesteps, and repulses, and, like, you could potentially clear a whole lot of things out of an area that you don't want in anymore. So I think there's value there. I just, like I said, I think it's going to come down to what is, if you're looking for straight damage, what is the chances you're going to run into a Hermit or you're going to run into a caster with a vision, and then what is your play? Like I said, I think it'll still see the table. I don't know how much.
Yeah, I think comparing it to the Nerf, like the Nerf is, it's a bargain and it's really straightforward, right? Like your choice with the Nerf is like, when do I commit it? And that's it. Whereas the Angelius, you kind of have to be like, what am I doing to deliver it? What am I doing it to like pull it back? Like, and there's a lot, I think there's more flexibility and versatility with it. Like you could potentially be like putting Refuge on it and using it for its spray. Is, I don't know if Refuge is melee or range, but anyways, you can do a lot of things with it, but it feels like it requires more creative thinking on your feet in order to get your value out of it. Whereas the Nerf, you're just like, all right, bat, go forward and hit something.
Just apply Nerf's forehead.
Exactly.
All right. Okay. I think that's enough said about the Angel. Let's move on to the Blade Archon. Slight change. Looks like they're happy with it. There's, like I said, there's been a lot of discussion around its spells. Like people have concerns with the Bending Doom and so on. Its output, whatever, but all they changed was they removed a couple damage boxes. He's down to 10. Does that meaningfully change the Blight Archon, do you think?
I feel like it changes the Blight Archon with a single Harrier. Like that is the problem case that I think they're attempting to address with this change. Because going from being a 14-17 with effectively 25 boxes to a 14-17 with effectively 23 boxes, if you keep transfers open and keep the Harrier nearby. That's a huge difference in survivability in that scenario, especially considering that with a single Light War Beast, you are cutting for Fury every turn, probably. So I really like this fix as something that like addresses the biggest concern that people were bringing to the table. Like it in my mind, addresses the viability of that Kallus 1 Blightbringer double Archon, double Chosen build, without limiting its functionality overall on the table generally. And so, I don't know, I like it.
I agree. I think box drop is impactful enough. I didn't quite understand the argument of, yeah, well, it's only ever going to take a lesser because that's all it needs and it's just gonna sit back until late game, like, okay, but why would you do that and ignore half of its kit? Like, it's great if you just want an armor buff, and it's going to do nothing else. But if you actually want to threaten impending doom and attacks, if you actually want to threaten the spray, if you actually want to do anything and keep this thing even semi-alive, like, you're going to need more than one fury. And that's all you're getting for that lesser every turn if you want to be able to transfer. So to me, it didn't make sense. And the more lists I build and talk with people about, it's funny how few people are just going, yeah, I'm going to take this with just a lesser. Like, more often than not, I'm seeing a light and a lesser or a heavy. Like, the lesser is still there to camp a zone and to be an extra couple boxes or be a fury battery, but, like, it's not what it's getting taken for. It's there to try and help it do its thing. The funny one I saw the other day was Harrier and a Bloodseer, and it looked so weird until it got explained, because it was like, oh no, it's telemetry for, you know, these attack spells, and the Harrier gives it dodge, and since it's going to be playing back and hopefully using terrain, now it'll be a, you know, 16 or 18 defense with dodge behind a wall with transfers. Like, it's not unkillable, but it's going to be way more than its point cost to try and get at it. And then if something does get it, I've got X, Y, and Z to back it up so I can cheat that trade. And to me, that makes a lot of sense. Like, that's the way of doing things is, here's this thing that's going to be difficult to remove, but is relatively inexpensive, and it's going to take way more than its point cost to kill.
Yeah, the thing that's actually been surprising me seeing lists this week is how many people are taking it with an Angelius or Zuriel. And so we've gone from this, like, taking it with a single Harrier to, like, taking it with a single premium beast, which is feels like also an interesting direction that I was surprised by.
Blurial package.
Yeah, the Blade Archon turns up Zuriel quite a bit, right? Just giving it, you can give it the armor buff, and then you can also have sprint. Like, you get two spells from this 8-point, essentially, like, this 8-point addition to your army, and you just slap Zuriel on that bad boy and be like, all right, Zuriel's going to do an insane amount of work, and you're going to have to deal with this, and potentially, you can just run it on the side of a board very independently of your Warlock, and have it do a good job of holding a flank by itself.
1321 are big boy stats, that's for sure.
Certainly. So how do we feel with the Blight Archon? Is it going to change, do you think, before we see it, when we see it released in September?
I kind of don't think so. If anything, you might see minor tweaks. I don't think you want to see any major overhauls. I think it's going to have impending doom because, like Hungerford said when he was on, that was basically what it started with. They said, hey, we want this thing to be Fury 5, we want it to have impending doom, and we want it to have meltdown. Okay, let's build an Archon around that. So something tells me that part of it isn't changing. Crimson Ballet isn't really a problem. Nobody seemed to complain about that at all from anything I saw. And then the only other real complaint was the armor buff. And I mean, I don't see a problem with it. Sure, you can stack armor to make things like relatively hard to kill, but there's counterplays to all of them. There's Blessed, there's Grievous, there's spell removal, and to just say, oh, well, I have to change my list to try and deal with this now. Well, yeah, you do. Congrats. That yeah. happens.
But Ryan, I don't want to have to run those things.
Say what?
I don't want to have to run those things.
Yeah, and it's like, if that's your argument against it is, well, I don't want to have to run spell removal. I don't want to have to run blast. Well, I don't want to have to run some of the things I do to deal with friggin' Signar, but I do it. I feel bad for nobody who goes, well, yeah, but I like this list and I don't want to have to change it. Sorry, but I sucks to be you. If you want to play at that level, then you have to change and you have to be willing to adapt. If you can't do that, then you take your chances and deal with it. But that don't deny other people nice things. To the actual Archon itself, yeah, I think it's going to come out basically as it is. I don't see any major changes. I think it does a job and it does it well. It's good enough.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to Ferelor. He went down from 5 to 4 points. Are we happy with Ferelor now, Avery?
I wrote a thread about this. I feel like Ferelor is someone who I'm going to take with Krissa because Tough No Knockdown is good, and it's someone who I'm going to take with Fiona because having the ability to stack multiple defensive skews actually makes it feel relevant. Going up from 12 to a situational 14 doesn't feel like enough to justify that many points in an army, but going up from 12 to a situational 17 definitely does. So I feel like Ferelor, yeah, I'm definitely taking Ferelor with those two casters, and I don't think I'm taking him with anyone else, even with the point deduction. 4 seems really reasonable. I wish Hold Ranks was a +2 defense, just like period, rather than +2 defense in melee. But yeah, I think the lists I'm taking him in haven't changed, but I do appreciate that the point went down by 1. It feels more reasonable in the lists that I would take him in anyways.
Yeah, I think Krissa makes a lot of sense. Fiona makes sense as well. Ryan, your thoughts on Ferelor?
Honestly, I tried to build a couple lists with him, and even at 4 points, like, I appreciate that he went down, but I don't think that I personally am going to take him anything. I think he's fine, but, like, with Krissa, I don't... The Tough No Knockdown isn't a big deal for me. I don't think that's worth 4 points just because you already have Tactician in the list. So I would rather bank on, you know, having Incubi or having something else and then being able to move through my own dudes rather than worry about a 1/3 chance at a tough no knockdown in a meta that already has a bunch of Grievous and Tropic and other such things. That's me. That's, you know, the kind of things that I play into frequently. So I guess I could see it with Fianna, but I don't think I'm going to take him. I think he's probably fine at 4 points, or at least tolerable. I still would have liked to have seen, instead of his points going down, something get buffed up with him to make him worth 5 points. I would have liked to see, you know, the mini feat change or whatever else. I understand why they can't do it, but it's not exciting for me.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. I'm with Avery. Like I said, I think putting them in Krissa makes a lot of sense. Fianna is very good for the stacking def bonus. But yeah, otherwise, Farrelly is kind of a tough sell for me. We'll have to see if he sees more play than either of us think, but going forward, yeah, pretty limited in my list. Let's move on to the Virtue Host. This is the last change for week 3. Their cost went down from 9 to 8. And, like, that doesn't seem like a lot, but they are an FA3 unit, so you can take multiples of them. And I know that, like, you really haven't found a use for them. I'm not sure if, Avery, you have. But, like, I know Nate has been really excited about the Virtues, and I hope to, like, get him to talk about that, because I don't really see it. Like, to me, they're like Scather bots, which, like, is great. Scathers are awesome, but I don't know if that's what I want right now. So it's kind of a hard sell coming out of this for me. Ryan, what are your thoughts on the Virtues?
So I've tried them a couple times with a Chrysalist. I actually really like them. I didn't think I was going to. So the point change is nice. It gives you, you know, a couple extra in the list. It's not a huge change. I think the big problem I keep seeing people do is they try to take them as like the thing to build your army around, right? They try to play them as, yeah, you got a cloud wall and they're this frontline unit, and they're really kind of not. I think a lot of people, myself included, were misplaying them for quite a bit or misthinking about them. And it led to this weird trying to force them into situations that weren't good for them, and then saying, well, they weren't doing this job when it wasn't really the job they're supposed to be doing. Like, they could kind of do it, but not as well. And as a whole, I can't see a reason to take 3 units almost ever, but I think 1 to 2 would be a solid choice to a lot of different infantry casters, or ones that can throw out wide area buffs like Krissa, like Saren, like even Thags 1, or oh Christ, I'm blanking on the name now. Ryas. There we go. I think they'd be interesting in a couple of places, is the point.
Yeah, I'm happy to try them out. I don't know what you've been seeing them with, Avery. What is your thoughts on them?
My thought is that I feel like the biggest thing that needed to change about them was just the way that they were pitched to the audience. Like, the solicitation text that went out for them billed them as this like elite infantry shredding unit that was like terrifying to encounter, and I don't think they're that. I think they're a like harassment and utility toolbox unit that has like a lot of troubleshooting potential. Like, soul static is gonna, the enemy models cannot gain soul tokens from friendly models destroyed within 5 inches of this model. Like, that is gonna be super relevant in against some lists, right? Like, that does a lot against the Void Archon, right? And I feel like the ability to like throw Scathers in charge lanes is gonna do a ton against certain lists. So I feel like the fact that they got Pathfinder in week 2 was really important, because it enabled them to do what their actual job seems to be, which is troubleshoot. And going down to 8 points seems good, but I also feel like we have a lot of 8-point units whose job is to harass and troubleshoot.
So you said there's a lot of units at around 8 points that job is to like troubleshoot. Like, give me an example of what you're talking about. Like,
yeah.
I guess I'm not sure if you're thinking of troubleshoot in the same way you're using it. So I feel like I'm on the same page here.
Yeah, I feel like, maybe I should just retract that statement. But I feel like in terms of like being a annoying to remove harassment unit on a flank, like grotesque banshees are 8 points. In terms of just like being, and they have kind of like.
I think I understand what you're saying though. Like, you can take these smaller packages to do kind of what the virtues are providing. You know, in regards to like flanking or providing a specific support, but is the combination of things that the virtues bring, is that unique enough in Legion? You know, Soul Static is nice. The clouds they can make on themselves is nice, but awkward. A number of scathers is beneficial. Is that package good enough for what Legion needs or will bring in comparison to these other things? Like, we can take Strider Scouts and deal with a flank. We can take Strider Blightblades, which you don't see, but they have ambush. They deal well with flanks. Like, we can take Ice Witches, and they are a very excellent support unit that help not only with debuffing with Ice Cages or Puppet Master, or buffing your own guys with Puppet Master. Like, is the Virtue Host a compelling choice in Legion? And like, a lot of people are kind of on the fence on that.
So, what, you know, looking at what you just said, Strider Rangers can hold a flank, that's right, but they're not in the same theme. Blightblades can hold and harass a flank, right, but they're not in the same theme. You know, you have Grotesques that can kind of harass a flank, but again, they're not in that theme. So, you're right, we do have harassment options, but those harassment options haven't really been available in Children and in Oracles. And I think that's kind of what the virtues help to do, is they give you that harassment option where you previously didn't have it. Because like in Children, what was your harassment option? It was Min Archers, which before the changes, you weren't taking them. I don't remember the last time I saw anybody but me playing Archers. Or it was Raptors, Min Unit of Raptors. But those were 11 points. You know, and that's it. Even these things that could harass, like, say you took a Min Unit of Swordsman at 9 and said, nope, I'm going to put them on a flank and they're going to be just a threat over here. They didn't have Pathfinder. They still don't base. You take Archers and they don't have Pathfinder base. And I think that's the important thing with the virtues is, yeah, maybe the first couple turns they just lay down Scathers and they block off charge lanes. Or maybe you have one walk over and add a cloud onto a forest to block line of sight. So, you know, maybe if they only have a certain number of shots, they can't get rid of the virtue and put them into a beast or whatever's behind it that they want to get at. They don't have the resources to do both. And I think that's the thing virtues do really well, is they drain resources from your opponent, and then late game when it comes around and they don't have as much to dedicate, suddenly they can actually get work done. The other thing that, you know, I think a lot of people, myself included, were overlooking at first, is it's not just their damage that gets boosted, it's also the hit. So if you want an Archidon, you know, dealt with, virtues are actually really good position to help deal with it. Same thing with like a Nerf in the mirror. They're in a good position to be able to do some damage and then reliably hit that thing. They're mat 6 or 7 base, so with the boost, they're on average hitting def 17, I think. And like, that is a really good place to be in when most of your infantry has a hard time hitting, has a hard time getting like viable hit buffs.
Yeah, that's true. I feel like I haven't thought about the champion as much, but Virtue Hosts feel like they are really good into strange bedfellows. Like, they offer Scathers to take out Angels, and they also offer Soul Static to shut down a lot of the Void Archon's threat. And so, like, if nothing else, having like an 8-point answer to a strong like meta list that people are afraid of right now feels really good.
100% agree. It also seems like it'll have some game into like the Striker 2 Flames or the Fiona Flames, just because of the amount of Scathers you can put down with all the single wound infantry they're running. If you can force them to like bottleneck themselves, that's just a huge win.
I feel like having one or two units of Virtue Hosts in one of your lists seems like something that people will gravitate towards. I can't imagine anyone playing three units and not clocking themselves.
Yeah, that many scalers is going to present an issue not only for clock, but also table real estate, right? Gonna get messy. Alright, well, I think that's probably a decent place to leave off on the Virtue Host, but related to the Virtue Host, like, we didn't see any changes for the champion, but I know a lot of people are pretty high on them. Ryan, do you see a home for the champs?
Yeah, several. That dude is a boss. He has a really good defensive stat line, 13-18 with 8 boxes on a small base. And, like, boosted POW 14s are just really good. Like, that guy or that thing is a solid combat solo, and I would be super surprised if it didn't push Kralix out as, like, almost the auto-include rec option and, like, children. I'd be super surprised if you didn't see a list with at least one of them.
Avery, have you done much with the champion?
Yeah, one of the things that I haven't seen anyone talk about yet is that Bethane, too, is a virtue. Does not have Pathfinder, and that Blight Cloud will bring her up to 16-17, which feels like a solid defensive stat line. And so I think definitely with Bethane having a single virtue champion, like that value alone feels really good because she's got output potential, like personally, that you want to at least bring her in close enough to be throwing out like Breath of Entropy, and she's got two pound strength 14 attacks. So yeah, I feel like the effective defensive buff to her feels really interesting, and I haven't seen anyone talking about that or building around it. And in general, it seems like a good model, the champion.
Yeah, I'm reasonably satisfied with them as well. All right. Okay, so that's all the models I wanted to talk about. Avery, I know you've made a couple of posts in CID. Is there anything you haven't addressed, like, on the forum that you would like to talk about, maybe?
A couple seems like an understatement here.
Yeah, I've a lot of posts. And my partner and kids were out of town when the CID started. And so I was, like, home, just, like, totally alone for the first time in years. And so I definitely got very immersed in list building and in the CID process. I don't know if I have anything that I haven't already talked about. I really hope that the Nephilim chassis gets a stat buff that can ripple across all of them and also do something for the Nephilim soldier, because it feels like there's a lot of people who are really disappointed that it's not in the CID. And just like the Nephilim in general feel really undertuned. That's the change that I think is like most possible and I most want to see at this point.
So you're kind of hoping for some arbitrary changes coming out at the end of the CID?
I don't know. I've been heard of a zombie kind of that and going to get changes currently in the CID. I don't think they're holding back any changes on models or units and just being like, you might see like a random, I guess, stat change if they feel it's warranted. But other than that, it seems unlikely.
So I, being a weirdo, put together a list of what has changed in Legion. And the soldier actually got changed once already, and it gained brutal charge on its melee attack, which is kind of interesting. You know, it needs a little bit more, but yeah, they have thought about the soldier, right? They did bump it up a little bit previously, so who knows when we'll actually see him get changed in the future, but I just thought it was kind of neat to look at how much has actually changed in Legion. It's a fair bit. So when I first, you asked to first come on this episode, Avery, we talked a bit about how CID feels in comparison to like developing for tabletop or testing for that sort of stuff. Like, what is there any meaningful difference to it? Like, what was your experience compared to some of your previous work?
Yeah. So I tabletop consulting on other people's design projects. And I think one of the things that I really experienced in this CID is how difficult it is to make changes that feel like spot on when you're only changing like a small subset of models and you can't affect broader templating of the game at large, because like most of the game is already in print. It's like already set in stone. And so there's a lot of things, like a lot of people talked about the Blight Archon's Dragon's Blood being the like, oh no, people are going to skew for this. This is out of control. But I actually felt like Impending Doom, like looking at that, I was like, this is the thing that if anyone's going to skew a Blight Archon list, like it's going to be combining two Impending Dooms with other things and being able to drag a model like 20 inches. But because Impending Doom already exists somewhere else in the game, we can't actually look at it and be like, is 4 inches more reasonable than 5? And so the more I like tried to put together feedback in the CID, the more I encountered like how tricky it is to try and address things in this granular way when a lot of the time the thing that I want to see changed is broader templating issues.
Yeah, certainly. There's been a recent discussion on Knightscast. No, it wasn't much of a discussion. It was more Mark just freaking the hell out about how there are three different versions of Battle Host. And for the record, I absolutely agree with that. Like, it is kind of crazy that just because one is an Infernal Master, one's a Warlock, and one's a Warcaster, that we have to have three different spells that all do the same thing. Right? Like, and that's just indicative of, like, not necessarily an unwillingness to change, but like not thinking ahead maybe is kind of the bigger issue.
Yeah, when you go to War Machine University and you search Battle Host, it pulls up both Battle Host and Escort, which I find really and it doesn't pull up the third one. They haven't.
Oh, sorry, it's Road to War, actually. That's the one that has three.
Road to War. Okay. Well, yeah, Battle Host has Battle Host and Escort. Road to War has Road to War, Rites of Torment, and Warpath. Yeah, I think that like this is something that unfortunately you can't really resolve by like just fixing Road to War, Rites of Torment, and Warpath, because there's some bigger, broader templating issues that feel like they can't really be resolved until you hit Mark 4. Like the fact that there isn't a term that refers to Warlocks, Warcasters, and Infernal Masters, and there isn't a term that refers to Warjacks, War Beasts, Monstrosities, and Horrors, like just creates so many templating issues. And the fact that like every animus or spell that grants an ability has to have a name for the spell and for the ability, and they have to be separate. Like Privateer Press has a lot of like instances where they repeat terms like Hellmouth and Hellmouth and Blightbringer and Blightbringer.
And why do you think we're called Blightbringer, Avery?
And it's just like, of course they do, because they have to name everything like 3 or 4 times so that they can like pull it across design.
Yeah. It's an interesting problem to solve, right? And, you know, I come from Magic where like they've had templating for years and they're still tweaking it, right? It's never perfect. But then I look at War Machine and I'm like, what are you doing? I don't know. It's interesting that it's continuing to like crop up, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Magic also has some stuff around, like, there is, like, sacrificing, killing, destroying, right? And none of them quite work the same, but they all mostly mean the exact same thing in most instances.
Yeah, they all have the same effect. The thing goes to the graveyard, but, you know, it's all in different ways, right? So, like, I get it. It's a difficult problem to solve from a design perspective, for sure. Ryan, how do you feel about, you know, the wording on abilities? Like, do you ever feel frustrated that something hasn't been cleaned up after so long?
I mean, personally, not really. I guess I just kind of look at it and I've accepted that this is a thing, because as much as, so like, take Warjacks and War Beasts. Yes, it's an interchangeable game, but these were designed as an interchangeable like series of games. Like War Machine is its own game and Hordes is technically its own game, and the fact that they were built as like independent, I'm trying to think of the word, they were built independent of each other kind of led to this point. And I think the easy way to almost clean that up is to just add Hordes to War Machine And instead of, you know, oh, well, it's beasts and jacks, is to say, look, this is your battle group commander and war machine, that's a warcaster. If you're playing one of these factions, it's a warlock. And then it's, you know, a battle group commander and their battle group. Like, that's how you refer to spells, is like, yes, things in this battle group gain X effect. Like, that to me seems super simple, but I think Avery's right that it's not a thing that's going to get resolved until there's a major edition change. But as far as like spells and effects go, I've just accepted that it's a necessary thing that exists and I'm not going to change it. So rather than get bothered by it, I just try to remember what everything does. And it sometimes gets super easy when you can be like, Warpath, what the hell is that? Oh, it's just Road to War for Beasts. Cool, got it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, no, that's fair. It is interesting. Yeah, like you can relate one spell to another. Like that's definitely a solution that also crops up in Magic. It's like, oh, this is just that, but different, right? So I understand that perspective, certainly.
Yeah, I think that there's kind of this effect, like coming in as a new player, and especially like starting in like Steam or starting in like tournament settings for a lot of my games. One thing I realized is that like because every spell name and ability name is just like slightly different and works because it's like Hordes versus War Machine works playing a game against a War Machine faction. And especially because people are on death clocks, they're talking really fast and they kind of get annoyed if you ask them to like slow down or explain something. I kind of just zone out a little bit on the other person's turn, and I'm like, I don't understand what the words you're saying are exactly, because battle host and escort are different, and everything's slightly different. So I'm kind of just going to trust that you're not lying or cheating. And then at the end of your turn, I'm going to like clue back in and be like, cool, what's the board state? Because there's kind of this second, you kind of do have to learn like this second game that's like familiar but different. It's like a through the looking glass version of the game that you play.
Yeah, that's a really good way of looking at it. And I think they took steps to combine both War Machine and Hordes with not Mark III, but the Oblivion update. I think they're like, all right, this is a game now. But unfortunately, it's mid-edition, so they can't really make like broader changes.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting when Mark Fuller eventually rolls around how some of the stuff gets addressed. Imagine for a second you could take like Escort and Battle Host and just completely decide like, one of these things no longer exists because it doesn't need to. Like mm-hmm. We throw it out and completely change it to this instance and it works in all cases. And like the effect that has for, like Avery had brought up, for newer players, because now you have one spell name and you know what the thing does, but also as far as like Infernal rulings go and Judge rulings, because now instead of, you know, again, maybe somebody who's newer or a TO that hasn't been, you know, doing it for very long, getting called to a table and going, huh, well, how does Battle Host work? And now you're trying to look it up on the fly when maybe there was a ruling on it for Escort and it would work the exact same, but because of like that one keyword, you're not going to find it. Mm-hmm. So I think it'll be kind of cool to see how that gets changed and hopefully how it gets put together in such a way as to make sense.
What I wouldn't give for a rulings database, let me tell you.
Be the change you want to see in the world. You like data? I believe in you.
Oh god, you're right. I'm gonna have to do it, aren't I?
I mean, Magic has this on Gatherer, right? Like you up a card for Magic the Gathering and it tells you all of the rulings for that card. And I really wish an Infernal ruling was made. Like it went through a formal process to be vetted. And then it was added to War Room so that you could like click the little like question mark icon in the corner of a card and it would pop up the five rulings for that card.
What if, and instead of updating War Room that way, there's the whole card database that Privateer Press already puts out. What if it was just part of that? Where it's like, hey, you were looking at Signar and Nemo 1 is the first card. And then it comes, you know, a little hyperlink that's like, oh, here's all the rulings that have affected Nemo 1.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is a great idea, obviously. But again, that's a structural change for Privateer. It's not trivial work, right? That's the thing.
No.
We like to pretend it's all simple and it would be great if they did that. But like, It's not easy. If I was to do it, it would take me months, right?
Yeah, and I mean, ultimately, like, none of the things we're talking about right now are functional changes. None of them affect experienced players who are well-versed in the game. None of them have any bearing on tournament play. Like, these are all templating issues, which means they mostly affect the ability of new players to get invested in the game, and like how much value you'd actually get out of doing that templating work is kind of an unknown. It's a variable, right? Like, more people would find it more accessible to on-ramp into the game, but how many, and how many would have been turned away otherwise? Like, who knows?
Yeah. Is it worth the time and effort?
I mean, I guess my thought is that if you're not catering just to your experienced tournament crowd, you're not catering just to your people who know all of this already, you want to bring people in. And if the way your rule system works, in the case of like rulings or in the case of things like that, is turning people away or getting people who would be interested until they talk to an experienced player. You know, if your first game you go to do something and you're playing against somebody who's been playing a long time and they go, oh yeah, I know this is what the card says, but that's not actually how that works. Like, that can be an immediate turnoff for that person, where they're going to just look at it and go, oh, so the stuff that I just bought isn't even right? Like, what the heck? And you're going to, like, intentionally or not, you're going to turn people off of your game, which for the long-term viability of the game is not a good thing at all. I would think, you know, it's not highest priority, but you'd think that some type of database or some type of, even if it was a friggin' Google Excel spreadsheet, like on a G drive, like if that was just accessible, or it was like, hey, here's a hyperlink to every ruling that affects this spell, which are these, you know, casters, that would be a thing that would be wanted by the company and viable enough to say, hey, yeah, the stuff isn't maybe right, but here's an easy way to look up the changes that have been made.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, I think we should probably move on, because I feel like we're kind of beating a dead horse, but I agree. Something like along those lines would be very beneficial for new players and old players alike. Like, you know, I've been playing long enough that I understand the majority of the game, but there's still things that come up, and it would be nice to be able to, like, all right, does this interact in the way that I believe it does? And being able to just look at something really quickly and getting an answer would be super great.
Yeah. War Machine University has some of this. It has rules clarifications attached to entries, and some of them have links to Infernal rulings. But a lot of War Machine University stuff, by virtue of being like a community-edited project, is like, not all the Infernal rulings are listed there, and not all of the tactical descriptions and stuff like that in the entries is up to date. Like, a lot of Legion stuff I've noticed still references when grotesque units had ambush and ravens, when units had apparition and oracles. There's a lot of talk about the free cards you can get if you have enough Ogryn. And so I feel like there's the infrastructure to do this on a community basis in terms of like collecting all of the rules, clarifications, and Infernal rulings. Like, the infrastructure does exist if people wanted to put in the hours, but that's also a lot of hours to volunteer to put in.
Aaron, you know we're going to have to do this, right? This is going to be our one big thing that we do for the community before we die.
I mean, have you seen my Riot Quest sheet? I already kind of did that.
Yeah, but now do it for a game that actually matters. Oh shit, shots fired.
Oh, come on. Riot Quest is cool. Okay. Like I said, let's move on. I want to get one quick thing done before we wrap up the episode. And it's just kind of a wish list exercise. Pick.
These always go good.
Yeah, it's fun, right? Pick one model from the CID that if you could add one rule to or make one other change, you would be happy with. I'll give you a little bit of time to figure that out. I'm sure.
Doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah, as long as it's in the CID right now. So for me, I'm looking, man, probably at the Protector. It's in a very good spot where it is, right? Safeguard was a great pickup for Legion. Especially considering we had it previously in Mark II, so they kind of understand what purpose it serves for Legion. But I still think 9 points is a bit too big of an investment. You know, Animi are great. They're an extra spell on your card. Protector being a shield guard is fantastic. But I think just a minimal change for him, just bring him down 1 point, probably to 8 is probably good enough. And I think I'd be really happy with where the Protector would end up coming out of week 3. And, you know, I would print it and be happy with it. I think now I will let Ryan answer that question. Ryan, one change to one model. Hit me up.
Yeah, one change I would make is with Hex Hunters. I think I would either give them Apparition, because that fits with their, like, jumping around, being all magical theme that they've got going on, or I would just give them a flat base 7 speed. I think either or would help them immensely. I think that they're in a really close spot to being a, like, viable unit in multiples, but I think just that little bit of a push to help get them up the table or to help get them to engage and disengage would be the thing that got them to be exciting for me.
All right. Yeah, that's cool. Speed 7 with Cloak, or not Cloak, sorry, with Stealth, basically just hits that big ol' undo button on the Mark 3 change to them. And, like, I think we talked about it last week. You know, that's admitting defeat, right?
See, I don't know that it is, because so much has changed from when Mark 3 dropped to now that I think if the only reason you're not changing something is because you don't want to go, well, 4 years ago when we changed this, it was a mistake. Like, I don't think that's how that works. I think you could go back to 4 years ago when Mark 3 dropped and look at it and say, okay, this made sense at the time, but given the state of things now, it no longer makes sense.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
I also don't think a 10.5-inch threat in melee or a 13 for their POW 13s is really, like, game-breaking either. So it's not like it's going to kill anything. It would just make them super interesting.
Yeah, I really liked Apparition back in the old Oracles, so I'm actually kind of on board with that idea. I think it's really a cool place for them to be. All right, Avery, you've had time to think. What is the one change to one model that you would make?
Okay, can I cheat and give one change to two different models?
I'll allow it.
Yes, okay. Invocation of Blood would change to a duration round spell, and it would read, if Bethane is not flesh melded to with Belphegor, she immediately makes a full advance towards Belphegor. While inside of Belphegor, or while flesh melded with Belphegor, Bethane gains +2 speed, +2 strength, +2 def, and +2 armor for one round. So instead of being an either or, it's a both and. Because I think that it is, it's just that it really impacts her ability to play around with being flesh melded and unmelded. The fact that she can't jump into the meat suit with the buffs on. So that's the change I would make to Bethane 1. And then the change that I would make to the Angelius, because I've talked about Vision and Mad Visions, I would, now that both of the melee weapons have the exact same reach and POW, I would remove Armor Piercing and remove Single Shot and replace them with an ability that reads, the first time that you make a damage roll for with this weapon during your activation, have the base armor stats of the model. So it's just basically says the first time that you would make a damage roll with this weapon, it is armor piercing. And that trigger being on the damage roll instead of on the attack would get around the Hermit, and it would solve the one issue that I have with the Angelius.
Yeah, okay, that's pretty clever and fairly clean, because people already know what armor piercing does, but it does introduce, like, a weird state where, you know, while people get used to it, they're going to get got, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, it's not a bad thing, right? People getting got is kind of the way War Machine goes, as much as you don't want to necessarily admit that. All right, no, I like that change. Ryan, what do you think about either of those changes? Like, I'm a fan of changing Invocation to actually work and be worth cost 2.
I thought that's how Invocation worked already.
So no.
I haven't actually cast it in any of my games with Bethane 1, but I assumed that's how that worked already.
Nah.
So if we could just make it so that's how that works, that'd be great. I love that change. That'd be dope.
Yeah, right now, if you're outside, she just makes a full advance for two fury.
Yeah, it's an if otherwise spell at current, and it should just be both. You get both effects, because cost two is like, it's already a significant stat tax.
Yeah. I like that idea a lot. All right. We've covered a lot of ground on this episode. I think we did a good job talking about templating. We brought up War Machine University, so go check out them. I will include a link to the show notes, or a link to the page in the show notes, rather. CID is almost over, so I'm probably just going to leave that link off of this episode, but you guys know how to find it. I trust you. We have... What's that, Ryan?
The trusting people. That's a mistake.
It's the Canadian way, unfortunately. Except for right now, you Americans can't cross the border. We have merch. Please buy our merch. It's super cool. It's our logo, and it looks awesome. What else? Oh, link to the Discord will be in the show notes as well, so you can come chat with us. And that's it from me. Avery, you got anything to plug?
No, I mean, I guess anytime I'm given the opportunity to plug something, I should mention, hey, I'm a role-playing game designer. My website is buriedwithoutceremony.com. But other than that, no. It's a beautiful summer, and I hope people are going outside as much as possible.
Safely.
So I'm plugging nature, and that's it.
All right. Awesome. Ryan?
Yes.
Got anything to say before we wrap it up? That sounds like a no.
Anything done that you wouldn't edit out, therefore no.
Wise man. All right. Thank you all for listening to episode 75 of Blightbringers. We'll talk to you again soon.
Bye.
All right. Bye. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Avery. See you guys.
No. We'll see you.